Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for September the 16th, 2022. This is episode number 128. On today's show, we'll be talking about Ford reforming its dealerships. Aptera Gamma makes its full debut. Peugeot launches the E308 and 308 SW in Europe. And we're going to look at the 0 to 100% charge curve of the BMW iX. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the scrupulous Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the multi-chromatic Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, the convivial Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. Okay, before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to this channel. If you're watching us on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications so you know immediately when a new video is published. If you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. And all right, so with that out of the way, welcome everybody. Good morning, Jordan, out in the audience today. He's asking about coffee. Oh, don't start. Coffee is almost ready. Okay. Well, better grab that mug. I guess he's not at your place, right, Kyle?
No, Jordan lives down in Boulder, about an hour away.
Oh, okay. Because I saw he had some videos on your channel today. He checked out the Polaris UTV, electric UTV.
And he also rode the Zero DSR-X as well for a video that went up. Yep.
I was kind of thinking maybe we should have him on today because like that's a great new product and he had a chance to ride it and everything.
Well, just send him the link. He'll just pop in when we talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have it on the list of things that we got a lot.
We got to stick to the list.
Yeah. we don't need to stick to the list. But I mean, it's the first three items because it's on the thumbnail and so people are expecting.
All right, it doesn't matter. We'll run through it.
Let's move off. Let's kick this thing off with some news and then get to what we've been driving this week because we've been driving some stuff or there's some lots of stuff going on. As you can see in the background of Mr. Malogny's shot there, he's got like a sparkling. We're going to talk about this in a minute.
Insane, Tom. That looks so good. Getting there. We're getting there.
All right. So early this week, at its annual dealership meeting in Las Vegas, I believe, Ford laid out its future plans for dealerships and how they will sell cars. So there's a fair amount to this, and it might be a bit complicated, but luckily, Tom was one of just a few journalists allowed to attend this meeting, and he wrote all about it in a post titled Ford Gives Dealers 6 Weeks to Decide If They Want to Keep Selling EVs on Inside EVs. So Tom, why don't you start by telling us what Ford's overarching goal is, and then we'll maybe get into the particulars a little bit.
Sure. So the interesting thing is I was scheduled to go on that Polaris drive that Kyle was talking about last week. And I got a call from contact at Ford and said, look, we're going to be bringing all of our dealer network. We're doing our annual dealer meetings next week in Las Vegas. We'd like you to be there. And it's kind of unusual because these are typically private between the manufacturers and their dealer networks. I've actually been a guest speaker at one at Audi's dealer annual event once a while ago about electrification. And I was kind of like, well, I have something planned. I'm going to be doing a thing. And they were very blunt. And they're like, look, we're inviting 6 people in the country outside of Ford and outside of our dealer network. And you're one of them. And you want to be there. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm canceling my Polaris trip, you know, and going to Las Vegas. So, the news is that, you know, Ford is trying to reshape how they sell electric vehicles. They understand that they're under a lot of pressure from companies like Tesla that have direct sales models that have an incredible financial competitive advantage because they don't have the middleman. And, they're much leaner and meaner. And we've seen articles written on this before where Ford has said, we have to figure out a way to close this gap because they're able to sell cars for less than we can. So one of the things they did was they created Model E, a division of Ford, back in March. We wrote about this on Inside EVs. They basically split the company into 3 arms. Ford Blue Oval, which is the division that's going to sell Ford's combustion vehicles. Ford Pro, which is going to sell commercial vehicles, and Ford Model E. Model E sells Ford's fully electric vehicles. Plug-in hybrids and hybrids still fall under Ford Blue Oval, but fully electric vehicles will be sold under Ford Model E. So what the dealer, what Ford came up with is a way that they could try to be more competitive without having direct sales. A lot of people speculate, I was even one of them, that when Ford created this Model E, were they trying to create like a sub-brand so that they can do direct sales? And the way that the Ford rep spoke to me when he originally called me, I thought that's what they were going to say. I thought that they were going to, you know, like say, look, we're going to buck the whole system. We're going to fight it. We're going to get our team of lawyers, because that's what it would take. NADA, the Ford dealer associations, the lawsuits would be incredible. And Ford believes they would lose. And I believe they would lose too. They would be sued into bankruptcy if Ford tried to skirt dealer franchise laws in the US. They're so strong and so strict. Yeah. You just can't beat them. So they came up with a way that how can we kind of be halfway there and still improve our customer experience? So what they're doing now is, and this is the amazing thing, they're giving dealers 6 weeks to make this decision. And it's an enormous decision. So they're really just putting their feet to the fire and saying you're either in or you're out. If you want to sell electric Ford electric vehicles, all electric vehicles, and have like a Model E franchise, it's not really a franchise, but it sounds like it is. They have to commit to a bunch of things and they have to give Ford their decision before October 31st of this year. There's two levels that they can do. They can be a Model E certified dealership or a Model E certified elite dealership. There's not a lot of difference in the two. There's a lower financial commitment for just being certified. And if you're only certified, you're only going to get a limited number of electric vehicles to sell each year. Ford hasn't decided what that limited number is going to be, but it's going to be the same for all Model E certified dealerships. It might be, let's say, 20 EVs a year. And that came from when Ford kind of introduced this to the dealer groups before they introduced it to the dealership, because the dealerships have like representatives. It's almost like a, you know, like a union. And Ford did present this to the leaders before, and they had small focus groups of dealerships that signed NDAs, I would assume, and everything to talk about this. The dealers really pushed back on either you're all in or you're all out. So they created this, the certified level. And that's for dealers that maybe don't want to make the full commitment right now, but they still want to be able to sell electric vehicles to, let's say, their best customers. If a customer has bought 20 cars from a Ford dealership and now they come in and say, I want to buy a Lightning, they still can. So that's why they created that middle level, just certified. And the big investment here is going to be, if you want to commit to this, you have to install a lot of charging infrastructure on your property. And Ford's estimated it's going to be over $1 million to be a certified elite. And to have just a certified dealership, it's going to be about half that, about $500,000. Now, the one thing I will say is Ford with this estimate, because a lot of people said, that's ridiculous. How's it going to cost so much?
It's with a lot of money.
It is a lot of money, but Ford didn't include incentives. And because they couldn't guarantee what dealership would qualify for what incentive. So they wanted to throw the highest number out there. This is what it could possibly cost. I actually work in this area. I have two companies here in the Northeast that I work with that help dealers install DC fast charging infrastructure. And quite frequently, we get 60 to 70% of the overall cost covered with various infrastructure incentives that are existing. And that's before this new, infrastructure act, the Inflation Reduction Act. So that number that I put out there, the 1.1 to 1.2 million, is not probably going to be what the dealers end up having to invest. But Ford couldn't include incentives and then have dealers not qualify for them. And then, you know, it would be an S show. Right. You know what I mean? With the dealers be suing Ford and saying, you said it was only going to cost $200,000. It's costing me $1.2 million. So I wanted to clear that up because there was a lot of talk on the internet about how is it going to cost $1.2 million to put in one public facing DC fast charger.
And that's worst case scenario.
That's worst case scenario. It can cost that. So it can be $250,000 for the utility interconnect.
Right.
In some locations, depending on where you are. So then you have to buy the equipment. So anyway, that's charging. Here's the better news is the dealers have to have set pricing on their electric vehicles. Everybody pays the same price. Now, the dealer gets to set that price. So, you know, I also have seen a lot of people say, oh, well, what difference does it make? The dealer's going to set the price. Yeah, but here's what happens. They set a price and it goes on the Ford.com website, not just their own private website. Right. So if you're shopping for a Ford, you can shop all your local dealerships. Yeah, that's the Martin just pulled up the DC fast charging equipment that Ford's going to be providing to their dealers.
That's now, quite a cabinet.
Yeah. there's a variety of different pieces of equipment that they're going to make available if they want them. So you'll be able to go to Ford.com and check the three or four local dealers that are in your area, or even go further if you want, out and buy it from the dealership that has the best price. And right. you can complete the entire transaction online. You never have to talk to the dealership. And if you want, you can have the dealer has to offer free drop-off and pickup service, not only when you buy the car, but even for service. Whenever you need service on the vehicle, the dealer has to offer a drop-off and pickup service. So if you want, you can never visit a dealership. You can have everything done. You can order it, pay for it online, have it delivered to your house. It breaks, there's a problem with it, it needs service, and they have to come and they have to pick it up. And they also have a mobile service that they're going to put in, they actually have them out there already. They have like a small trial period. I think they completed over 100,000 service visits already with this mobile fleet that they have in place. So they can either come to your house, fix your vehicle here if it's something minor, or they can come pick it up from your work, your home, wherever you want. In addition to that, they have to provide excellent, I don't know what the measurement's going to be, but customer experience that they're going to level up. They have to do training and education, and it's not one-off. It's a continuing education for sales and service so that the dealership is up to speed, knows everything about electric vehicles, knows how to talk electric lingo, kilowatt hour, all that stuff. Service technicians are on top. They have to have special equipment, lifts to service the vehicles. All that is going to add to the cost of being a Model E certified dealership. And here's the thing. Now, yeah, they have till October 31st to decide if they're in. This starts January 1st, 2024. So all the dealers can continue selling EVs through 2023. But on January 1st, 2024, if you haven't agreed to be a certified or certified elite, you lose the right to sell electric vehicles. And
like you 5 years, right?
Yeah, until January 1st of 2027. Okay. Sometime in 2025, Ford is going to ask the dealers that aren't Model E dealers and say, okay, we're opening this up again. You have to tell us now if you want to start selling these EVs in January 1st of 2027. So you've got 6 weeks and you're either in or you're out. You could be halfway in with just certified, but quite honestly, if you really put it on paper, it's probably not worth that. You're going to get a limited amount of vehicles. You still have to make a pretty big investment. And, I think that you're either going to have dealers be certified elite, or you're going to have some dealers in super rural areas that will elect not to. I talked to one dealership actually when I was at the thing, and they're in, I think it was a rural West Virginia area. And they're kind of like, you know, we sold 3 electric vehicles in the last 3 years, you know, so we're just not ready for that here. And I understand that. There's some areas of the country that really, you know, electrification hasn't penetrated yet. And maybe it doesn't make sense for them to dump a ton of money into it and buy the Model E, buy into Model E.
Right. I can see for some, like a location like West Virginia, there's probably not been a lot of public education there as well. And the dealer's not doing a lot of outreach as well. So, you know, part of that problem is of their own making, or, you know, they haven't been.
I don't doubt that, but
you
own a business and it's dollars and cents. You know, they don't own these businesses so that they can, you know, help educate the public as blunt as that seems. They're there to make money. They're there to put, you know, food on the table for their family. So I understand they have to make they have to make a decision that works for them. And here's one of the reasons why Ford decided to force the dealers to have public-facing, publicly available DC fast charge. I know a lot of people say, you know, I don't want to, the last place I want to charge is at a dealership. But, you know, it's not like this is replacing the other infrastructure that's out there. It's not an either or. And Ford told us that 96% of Americans live within 25 miles of a Ford dealership. And 85% live within 10 miles. So, it's giving them a little bit of a backup. Like, well, if there isn't public infrastructure in the area, if you can't charge at home, if you live in an apartment, if worse comes to worse, we have a fast charger here. And, you know, it's at least one. And, you might wait on occasion. Yeah, it might not be the place where you want to hang out and get something to eat. And, you know, but you can come in, use our restroom. And, you know, salespeople would love to talk to you about your next vehicle, you know. But, you know, so, you know, as I understand why, and because I saw a lot of comments about people saying this is stupid. Nobody wants to go to a dealership. And I understand that. But this is, it's just adding more infrastructure. It's adding more layers. And you know what? If you're on a road trip and there aren't any public DC fast chargers and there's a Ford dealership on the highway, you know what? It's, you know, any port in a storm. So.
Sure. Yeah, that's part of the whole deal that I kind of struggle with too, because they're putting this big financial onus on dealerships, but it's mostly tied to this installation of infrastructure, fast charging pedestals. But I don't know that people actually use them, or if dealerships really want people just coming through and whatever, make a car and coming onto the property and creating traffic and all that kind of thing.
But wait a minute. I have to cut in there. Yes, sure. They do. Dealerships want traffic coming through their parking lot. Even if it's a Hyundai pulling into a Ford dealership and charging, you've got somebody for 30 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever it is, walking around, looking at your cars. If you're a smart dealer, you have a salesperson ready every time somebody plugs into one of those DC fast chargers in a parking lot to walk out and say, hey, that's a nice Ioniq 5, spark up a conversation, be friendly. Hey, do you need to use the bathroom? We got a restroom in here. You can get a cup of coffee at our service department. You know what you're doing? You're planting seeds. The person probably lives somewhere locally in that area, and maybe their next vehicle is going to be a Ford. Maybe they walk by the Lightning, when they're available, and say, you know what? That's a really nice electric truck. So use it as an opportunity. I think the smart dealers do want that.
The smart dealers, yeah. I've just heard like anecdotal, stories of people saying, they drove their Leaf to or they drove whatever to, like, because Nissan has a fair amount of fast chargers or 50 kilowatt chargers, but and the not always getting like a great reception at the dealers, But that's
That's training, Dom. That's having the OEM explain to the dealers why this works, why you should do it, why you should be EV friendly. Early on, Nissan didn't really do that. They just mandated it and they plopped them in. They didn't have any follow up on making sure they worked. There was no kicker that they had to be working. That's involved with Ford. These are going to be part of the Ford's Blue Oval Net charging network. So Ford will know immediately if one of these goes down. They'll supposedly follow up on it and tell the dealer this thing has to be fixed. They have, they have the hammer. If a dealer's not performing under the agreement and they're not, the charger's been broken for months, Ford could send them an email. Okay, you don't get any more Model E vehicles until that thing's fixed. Will they? I don't know, but they'll be able to.
Cool. Hey, Tom, I just want to clarify one other thing. So there's the Model E Certified Elite, and then there's just the Model E Certified. So the Elite can get as many EVs to sell as they want, but the lower level is capped?
Yep, it's capped. And I had asked them, would it be capped based on your volume of the dealership, or will it be the same for everyone? And Ford was like, we actually, that's a great question, because we thought about this for a long time. And they said, we're coming back to, we're going to make a hard cap that all the dealerships have the same amount, 10 EVs a year, 12 EVs a year. They said, it's not going to be a high amount. It's going to be only to satisfy the dealership's most loyal customers. So if you're not a loyal customer and you walk in, they will not put in an order for you. The dealers were just concerned that they would lose their customers, because every dealership has a group of elite customers that, have been buying there for 25 years. They bought 20 vehicles. Yeah. They don't want to say, no, we can't sell you that. So, right. So they made this kind of an exemption, and they're giving them a limited number of vehicles.
Right on. Hey, Kyle, do you have any questions about this?
I mean, I'm just looking forward to seeing it work in practice. It'll be great. I mean, nice to see Ford really putting the hammer down on everyone. Look, Polestar's got it to work with a dealer network, and it works pretty well there. So there's the proof. But at the end of the day, I think we don't really know until we see it all play out.
It's all in the execution. You're right, Kyle.
Right.
You know, it sounds great. Everything sounds great on paper. You know, I talked to everybody. I talked to Ford CEO Jim Farley. I mean, we're, you know, about this. And, you know, we asked them hard questions. And to a man, everyone on Ford's team seemed absolutely dead serious about this, almost as if it was like an existential threat that if they don't modernize, if they don't improve, if they don't hit on all these points, the startups that can sell direct are going to eat their lunch. And they know that. So they said, we have to be leaner, meaner. They also talked about reducing inventory with this online ordering. They won't have to have as many vehicles on the lots. That's going to also help them shrink the amount of inventory and lower their cost per vehicle. Because, I mean, you know, they were adamant about closing that financial gap. That if they're at a competitive disadvantage of $2,000 or $3,000 per vehicle, we can't win. And it was all about we have to get to a point where we're winning.
Right. I believe Jim Farley was saying that Tesla is like has a $2,000 advantage on them on the cost of selling cars or something like that.
Exactly. That's what I'm referring to. And they talked a lot about shrinking that gap. And you know, that's a lot of these things they put in place were meant to do that.
Right on. Martin, have any Ford dealer questions?
No, I'm curious about how it works in the US. Because so Ford and the Dealerships Association are... So Ford, the only tool in their tool bag, if you like, is to limit supply, which of course is a bit like cutting your nose off to spite your face. If Ford say, you can't sell our vehicles, then Ford don't sell vehicles. But like, is that because of the power of the dealers and because of the way that your legal structure is in terms of franchise ownership, is that the only tool that they've got is withholding their love, if you like? Like, you know what, if you don't want to play the game, then we just won't supply you. Or in their contracts, do they have to supply at least something? I mean, these agreements must be big legal documents themselves.
Yeah, I don't know the bones of the you know, the details of franchise agreements. As you said, they're probably hundreds and hundreds of pages. But in a nutshell, yes, Martin, I believe that is the only stick, the only effective stick that the dealers have. We have very strict dealer franchise laws here in the U.S. I've been working or dealing with this for the last 7 or 8 years with all the different OEMs. It's why, you know, in many states, Tesla can't sell cars. And, you know, these laws started in the late 40s, early 50s, and they had a purpose back then. You know, Ford would sell franchises to Martin and his wife, and then have, you know, Martin's Ford on Main Street. And if Martin was selling a lot of cars, Ford would say, you know what, this guy Martin over there, he's selling, he's making a killing. Why don't we just open up our own store down the road, and we can obviously sell them for cheaper because there's no middleman. So they started making these rules and laws, and they just kept getting stronger and stronger and stronger as the years went on. And as dealership lobby got stronger, they lobbied our politicians to make the laws even stronger. And we're at the point now, Martin, where the OEMs are extraordinarily limited on what they can do with relation to talking to a customer. They cannot even give you a price. That's why everything is a suggested price, you know?
Right. Okay.
Manufacturer suggested retail price. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So anything else we want to talk about this thing? Or can we move on? Oh, yeah. Okay. So last weekend, the Fully Charged Live event happened in California, and Aptera chose that venue to give its Gamma build a full public debut. This is the third iteration of the design, and the last one before the final production intent design sometime before the end of this year, actually. Sandy Monroe from Monroe & Associates was on hand, and he helped Aptera take the sheet off the car. And as you can see, it looks a bit more finished than previous prototypes. I don't know if you can run that video.
Am I allowed to say?
It's Aptera video.
Oh, okay.
So we just want to make sure we don't get in trouble with the YouTube people, copyright and all that. It seemed pretty popular. The crowd was crawling all over it and sitting in behind it, the yoke, and it doesn't have like a proper steering wheel. I like the fact that they show you what, like, to open the door, you have like knock on the Aptera badge on the side. And the rear hatch also opens by knocking on the back deck. So, hey, Kyle, you were at Fully Charged last week, I think. Did you check out the Aptera up close at all?
Yeah, I did check it out. I didn't sit in it or anything because it's not a final production car. So in my eyes, it doesn't exist until someone can buy it. I've said that for years. And this is a case where we really just need to be a bit more cautious than like everyone there at the event. Right. It's like taking 10 years to get to this point. Yes, they have a resurgence now. There's a lot of things that this needs to go through. Look at the material sourcing. Like, I don't think the materials are finalized in there quite yet. It looks really cool. It's like my kind of car. I would drive one because it's weird and kind of, you know, not traditional. It just seems very interesting. But at the end of the day, they weren't latching the doors every time someone got in. You could tell it was early stages, and it's not even the final production build. So for me, it's just like another round of prototypes. And at this point, I think we're all just ready to see the final version. Now, they did have some test cars driving around on the streets, which is great. Okay. But it's a little bit different when we talk about Aptera than when we talk about a BMW or a Mercedes that's showing us a concept car. It's like they've had 100 years of proven history to show they can get whatever they're showing us to market with maybe failures in the single digit numbers. And this is a very much, okay, let's see if they can pull this off or not. Now, granted, they have the user base excited about the car. Everyone was pumped and they drew a huge crowd. And so there's no question about the enthusiasm. I don't think there's a question about the idea of the car. I think it works, or I should say it sounds like it works really well. But again, it's never been independently tested. We don't know if the specs are true. I asked one of the founders, who I've known for years, I said, hey, what's your 400 miles of range based off of? Is that in the EPA cycle? Did you run a 3-cycle, a 5-cycle, or the new cycle where you drain the battery to 50%, do an offboard drain? And he's like, oh, I have no idea, actually. It's just the 400-mile one. And I'm like, well, you know, that doesn't really bode well for confidence if you don't even know how your car was rated for range. And I hate to be a bit of a downer on this because, I think the only reason I'm trying to be a bit more realistic is you just can't buy the thing yet. Once it's sold on sale, once someone can get, all the testing on it, make sure it can actually DC fast charge without overheating, because I know they downsized all of the components to reduce weight. This is going to be an interesting one to see play out, but it looked really cool. It's just not the production one, so it's just like, we're looking at a concept.
I know, I'm still waiting to see the production. You can tell there's a couple places on, and even in that little clip that you can see, like, I think they 3D printed a lot of like the parts on that, or they're not like a commercially available parts, like some hinges and fasteners.
And they're still low volume at this point, and maybe they'll get it into the production one, all of the small details. But looking at this, it's just like, you can tell people are just like brainwashed by efficiency and like, this is going to be the answer to everything. And I'm just like, okay, let's be a bit more realistic here and let's just see if they can even make one of these things.
Right. Yeah. I like the car and I like the idea. So it's like a new small development. So I just want to give them a bit of a mention here.
Did they go down the whole route of which they were doing a few weeks ago, which was trying to lobby politicians to kill CCS and make Tesla the only plug in the United States? Are they still banging that drum, or was that a one-off day just to get some attention?
I don't know. I didn't spend much time around their booth during the event, and I think they're still pushing for it according to their social media posts and everything. Okay. I think it was a good marketing move the first time. Now it's just kind of getting old. Not going to happen in my opinion.
Well, it's not that. That's what I was interested in, because when they had all the attention, Aptera need people talking about Aptera, whether for good or bad. And when they went down this route of saying, right, we need to lobby Congress and kill CCS and Tesla's the only way forward. Of course, the Tesla community went crazy, you know, well, the 5%, the 1% hardcore of Tesla went mad for it. And then I think everybody else was right. Like, well, that's
your song.
That's silly because of every EV sold with CCS. And that was that's what made me worry about Aptera, was it's clearly such a stupid thing to say, or such a stupid thing to hang your hat on. Like, it's not a stupid thing for a random Twitter account that wants to gain followers or just wants engagement or clicks. Because, you know, with Twitter, you can say something stupid and people will retweet you if they agree with you, or if they retweet you and say, hey, this is stupid. Like, it's all about oxygen in the room, right? So that is essentially what I thought they were doing with it. And I'd be interested that if they continue this on with a very serious, a very structured, let's only use the Tesla plug, here's our plan, I'd have more respect than that. If they've just sort of, you know, they got their 5 minutes of fame and they've gone away, that really made me worry about Aptera and just kind of how serious they were about entering the EV landscape. I don't know anyone at Aptera, and I've you know, we've interviewed them on this podcast.
Yeah.
They seem very nice and they seem very genuine. They've been through some highs and more lows. They've been through more lows than highs. We you know, really wish them the best, but there's a lot of, and you know what I think this is? I think this is because if you're watching this podcast for your first, second, third week, Tom's been doing this longer than, you know, the rest of us. But for a few of us that have been following EVs for more than 5 minutes, you know, as the Trevor Milton court case is underway this week, you know, there's been more than one company in the past who have made, you know, lots of noise about, hey, look at us, look at us. And some of us are jaded. And I kind of come at that Aptera as that sort of kind of like, oh, great.
Right.
Well, good luck. Well, good luck.
Like, that's how I feel too. It's like, we'll see it when you make it. And then I will be just as excited as everyone else, because that thing, if it was true, is so freaking cool, and I'll buy one. Like, it looks amazing and I can't wait to drive it and do stupid things with it. But it doesn't exist now, so why waste the headspace from my side of things?
Yeah.
Right. Kyle, just one question. Did you notice, since we're talking about the plugs, was the charge port open? What connector was visible? Like, what?
No, didn't see. Again, I kind of just stopped by, said hello to the founders of the company, had a quick chat, looked at the car, and then moved on. Yeah, didn't give it a close look. But I promise you, when they release the production intent one, I think that's when we need to get involved and say, okay, let's drive it and let's go to the factory and let's see if they can actually build these things in series productions.
Yeah, yeah. It's, man, it's pretty interesting. The whole story is just fascinating, I think. And this probably make a really great book if someone get like all the really inside, like dirty details. There's a lot of...
A really long book.
Yes. Anyway, longer than we have time for us. Let's just move along. So not big news for our American audience, but I thought it was at least worth mentioning that since it's part of the Stellantis group, Peugeot has quietly debuted its E308 and E308 SW. The SW, I believe, stands for station wagon. And Martin can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
These are electric versions of cars that exist with internal combustion powertrains and have relatively small batteries, you know, 54 kilowatt hours with a 51 kilowatt hour usable. Peugeot is saying they're the most efficient vehicles in their class, getting 4.89 miles per kilowatt hour. So power is up on the previous Peugeot EVs, but still only it's 115 kilowatts, 156 horsepower. And we estimate that it would get to 60 miles an hour in about 10 seconds. So it's not like a sports car. Maybe the most interesting thing about this car is the battery. It's a new chemistry made of 80% nickel, 10% manganese, 10% cobalt. So the 811. It's a 400 volt system. And despite its top charge rate of only 100 kilowatts, supposedly it charges from 20 to 80% in under 25 minutes. So it's not cutting edge at all, but it's, you know, at least decent. So we don't need to spend much time on this here, but Martin, can you fill us in on what this car means to Peugeot?
Yeah, Peugeots look like this on the day they're sold, and they never look like that again. You buy a Peugeot because you've got a family, and it's going to get wrecked and trashed. Like, no one's on a Sunday morning cleaning their Peugeot, being like, wow, look what I bought. You buy it because you have to. It's like Citroën and Peugeot sell on price, and these are absolutely essential electric vehicles for the average family that wants to transport, you know, kids, dogs, shopping, holidays, stuff like that. Absolutely. Nick says the man with an MG. 100%. 100%. I bought that MG because of the price. And Peugeot is exactly the same. And so Citroen, and you absolutely look at the monthly payment on that. And as long as it's as low as possible, then these cars will do enormously well.
Okay. Well, do you know, Ross, they didn't release the prices for this one yet, but do you have any ballpark idea where they're at?
These cars need to come in somewhere mid-30s. So okay. If they're £35,000, that's obviously with all the taxes and stuff, which all our prices are, then if you can get into one of those cars from that, look, that's still far too much. That's still 10 grand more than someone who's coming from Ice World is expecting to walk into a Peugeot dealership and say, right, I need my new family car, and this is what it's going to cost, and they're still going to be blown away by the cost of an EV. But, right. Prices are coming down, and these cars will bring the prices down.
Well, they sell the combustion version of this in the UK, the E308. So it was around £25,000.
Honestly, I don't know.
All right. I understand. I'm so out of touch with the ICE. I mean, I try to keep up with the ICE news, the internal combustion vehicle news.
But this has got some kind of Skoda ENIAC thing going on about it, but with the longer boot. I think it looks really cool. Very practical.
It actually looks great.
Very practical. I would have one of these in a heartbeat rather than an SUV or crossover.
Yeah, that's a nice station wagon. Anyone have anything they want to say, chip in with this?
Love the design. I also want to know who made that charging cable so perfectly straight.
You mean it could be CGI? I'm shocked.
No, it's not. There's no way.
That's right. All right. So let's move along. A little bit of BMW battery news. The automaker has been talking up its Gen 6 battery, which will use cylindrical cells. That's a departure from the pouch cells that it's used in the past. Apparently, BMW believes going cylindrical can help them cut the cost of finished packs by as much as 50%, which is huge. BMW says this new battery, it's the same diameter as the new Tesla 4680 cell, but it's taller. They have two versions of it, 95 millimeters and 120 millimeters, as opposed to the 80 millimeters of the Tesla cell. It will take an EV 620 miles or 1,000 kilometers, they say. But they don't say if that's like in a small sports car or a large SUV. So it does say that capping range at 620, it is capping range at 620 miles because that's plenty. So it may be that a number of BMW models will get 620 miles or 1,000 kilometers in the future. Maybe that's going to be like a standard kind of a thing. I don't know. So while we don't know the gravimetric density of these new cells, like how many watt hours per kilogram, BMW says that the battery pack will be made with the cells. Battery packs made with the cells will be 10 to 20% lighter, while having at least 30% more range. DC fast charging times also improve 30%. And we should see about 270 kilowatts of peak charging power. The bad news is that these cells are still a couple of years away from going into production vehicles, but we should start seeing them in the new class cars planned for 2025. And that's new class in the German spelling, NEUEKLASS. So I don't have anything here, but anyone have any questions or comments they want to say about that? Or maybe our audience.
Well, one of the things that I find interesting is how they floated this big range number, 620 miles of range, which is basically 1,000 kilometers. And now, but they're also saying if the energy density will improve by, 30%-ish. So that they'd have to have an EV on the road now with 425 miles to only be 30% more, have 30% more energy density and have a range of 620 miles. So, I mean, I think that number they floated out there just to kind of, for shock value, they could build a 600 mile EV today if they wanted to, they'd, stack, put battery cells everywhere you could put them. I mean, Ford could have a 500 mile range Lightning if they just took the space underneath the rear seating and just put another giant brick of batteries. So, when the companies throw these numbers out, 600 mile, it's you have to really look into it and look more at the energy density of the cells. I mean, I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. I think it's interesting. that now they're talking about cylindrical cells, because I remember, you know, one of the things that they were most proud of was that, you know, Tesla's batteries are garbage. They're laptop batteries. You know, we use automotive grade prismatic cells. Like, it was like, you know, we know how to do, you know, automotive grade. These things will last a lifetime. You know, with Tesla's, you know, round cells are, you know, that it's for rookies. And now they're using that, you know. So, I mean, it's great. Faster charging times, more energy density. And it's, like I said, it's interesting that we see BMW now gravitating towards cylindrical cells when they've been blue in the face telling me and everybody else that, you know, that's not the way to go. You know, you don't put in thousands of battery cells in a car.
I think it may help them make create a structural battery. It's more easy to make a structural battery with cylindrical cells than the pouch cells, I think. I don't know. Kyle, do you have any thoughts?
It just doesn't exist for a few more years. So again, everything. Yeah,
sure.
We'll see. I believe it when I see it.
Yeah, I hear you. But I mean, it was such a big sounding number. I think I thought, it's worth like just bringing this out so people know it's coming, and right, because we don't.
Well, we think it's coming.
I mean, yeah, between this and
after automaker walk back on their ideas, especially as they get a dump of investment into their electric vehicle architectures, when hopefully they decide on an architecture to build everything off of, because that's still a disaster. I mean, the last of their problems is battery density. They have a lot of other problems internally in order to mass sell electric vehicles they need to get to. Not a knock on their current product. I love the iX. I've spent the last 2 weeks with it, and it's been an amazing car. But that's one car built on one platform that probably won't be used ever again.
Oh, really? Not going to use that platform?
Not the iX. The iX was a one-off.
It's crazy. It's so much money to one of the best cars BMW's ever made, and they're not going to reuse it. Okay. I mean, they should stretch it and make an electric Cullinan off of it. That's what I thought they should do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's a lot of who knows? It's expensive to do these things.
I mean, yeah. Okay. Just a note here, I guess we'll move along. Samsung is also working on a 46 millimeter diameter cell, and that was on Inside EVs this week. Theirs was a little bit different. They're going to make one that's like 80 millimeters tall, like the Tesla cell. So I guess they can, if they make that, they can probably sell to Tesla. And they're going to have a shorter one. So like a 46, I don't know, 70, maybe. I don't know. They don't say the exact number. These are going to be over, have a cathode of over 90% nickel, which is a high number, and also a silicone anode. And yeah. So there was just a couple other things in the news. I just wanted to mention really quickly, Lucid is said to be making 40 to 50 cars per day now after some logistics changes and some executive overhauls. I'm not exactly sure all the bits and pieces there, but I think they were making like, was it 4 or 5 cars a day or something? So this is a huge improvement on that. And I don't know. I don't know. Tom, you have any thoughts?
Well, you know, I like Lucid. I love the vehicle. I think, you know, it's an absolutely amazing electric vehicle. You know, the efficiency is just off the charts, how they focused on efficiency. But, you know, as far as production, you know, I wrote the article for Inside EVs based on Lucid's information, you know, a year and a half ago, I forget what it was, that said Lucid will not experience, you know, manufacturing hell. They're just not going to, because of this, and this. And, you know, they've studied what happened with Tesla and why they, you know, had such problems with the Model X and then Model 3. And they're going to make sure this doesn't happen. Well, you know, this is like production hell squared. And I know there was a bunch of changes recently. You know, I suppose that they had to make some changes, even though the people that were in there seem to be industry pros that know what they're doing. I don't know who to put the blame on. It could come from the top, but you know, they had to make changes because I know part of the problem is the supply chain right now. That's, you know, absolutely part of the problem. I know people, you see people saying, I'm sick of hearing people complain about supply chain problems. Well, you know, what do you want them to do? You know, they can't force somebody to send them apart when the company's saying they don't have it. So yeah, that's a huge problem, but it goes way beyond that. And I hope that they've righted the ship here, because it's getting, you know, late early with Lucid, with their production, and they have to ramp up to making, you know, hundreds and thousands of cars a week. I think, what was it, halfway through the year, they only produced a little over 1,000 vehicles the first two quarters. That's crazy that it's been that low. They have to, yeah, Simon just said 50 cars a day is not that bad. They have to get into the hundreds of cars a day in order to keep this their company going. I know they're sitting on a lot of cash reserves, but no industry burns through cash like the auto industry if you're not putting wheels on the pavement.
It's true. It's very capital intensive. All right. So I want to hit just a couple other things. I don't know if you want to look. I thought this was interesting. I had it in my notes, but we're not going to talk about it. But Mitsubishi Fuso unveils its next generation eCanter. So Mitsubishi Fuso is their commercial truck division. It's owned by Daimler, actually, I believe, or no, Mercedes-Benz, but it's in Japan. But they're going to make it they're really going in for it now. They're going to make 28 different configurations of this truck. So it's just one more truck maker really kind of really now attacking the electric vehicle situation. So I just want to give them that little shout out. So Tesla may install its first V4 supercharger with solar in Arizona. So this is an article on Inside EVs. Right. So the next version of the supercharger for Tesla is the V4, and that's going to allow CCS charging as well, CCS2 fast charging. And the first one is going to have like 40 stalls, a 3 megawatt hour battery pack, mega pack, I guess we can say. And so that can charge about 40 big battery EVs just from itself. But I imagine it would be, you know, always be recharged from the grid or from the solar that's on site. And the charge speed might increase, they say in an article here. I'm not sure if any we've heard anything like solid about that. But we say the current peak for V3 superchargers is 250 kilowatts, but they too will be upgraded over time in order to be able to deliver charging speeds of over 300 kilowatts. I don't know. Kyle, have you heard anything about this?
But they will increase power. And I think Elon's tweeted about it, which doesn't mean it's going to happen. But for sure, you know, at this point, 250 kilowatts is great. The cars hit it pretty easily. Mm-hmm. I think Tesla needs to do two things with charging. A, they need a little bit of a different charging curve. I think they got to open it up a little bit. It's really not class leading at this point. They hit 250 kilowatts. And then I was just editing a video because it went up when I road tripped my Model S to California. That car tapers at like 35-36% state of charge off of 250. The Taycan holds 270 to 50%. The Lucid Air holds pretty high on the new charging curve, but I'm going to test that next week. And so basically, yeah, Tesla is no longer class leading with their curve. Version 4 charging should be really interesting. We don't know much about it at this point. But yeah, why not? Version 3 could give more power than it does today. It wouldn't be hard. It would just load balance across their 4 stalls. The biggest issue would be the handles and the connection point getting hot, because that already happens at 250 kilowatts, which is 680 amps, something like that. That's what heats it up. And it is liquid cooled, but I think they should have kept the same thickness at the version 2 chargers rather than thinning it down for version 3, and then that would have helped with longevity.
Right. I saw that GAC in China, the automaker in China, has a charging system, and I think it was 480 kilowatts, but I saw a video on their system the other day, and they have water cooling not only in the core but also in the handle is water cooled as well.
So every CCS cable, they run all dielectric fluid right to the pins.
Okay. Okay, mm-hmm. I didn't know that. That's good.
Yeah, thank Tesla you. Does it too.
Okay. Anything you want to say anything about this, Tom?
No, not really. I know. Okay. It's interesting. Let's get them out there.
All right. What we're doing for time. Okay. And just really quickly, Sono Motors received an order for 12,600 Scion solar EVs from a company called Finn, F-I-N-N. I know Kyle's checked that car out. They're coming out. It's one of those ones. It's a startup. It's like a young company. They haven't sold anything, so it's hard to say if they're actually going to make it. But this is, you know, looks promising. Customer orders. That's like one of the pieces that you need to be a going concern. So, but let's move on to what we've been driving this week, because That's what we've been dying to.
Actually, can I butt in for a second?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Because I don't know if we've discussed it yet. We've talked a lot about future stuff, but maybe we should talk about stuff that's already happened here.
Sure.
The first is Mercedes EQB is at dealers.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, they just threw them out there. It's like on sale, and then they didn't say anything. So Mercedes is having a big event in Denver next week to drive all of their electric stuff. And I was like, EQB. And then I went on some websites, and they're like, in stock. And it's like, what? So this car is for sale in America today. Right. You know, whether or not they're immediately available, I'm not sure. Didn't know that was the thing. Also, EQS SUV will be launching soon. Yeah, so that's pretty freaking exciting. Also, some charging news that's happened this week that's happening right now, which I think is actually quite positive, is Electrify America is ripping out a lot of their older failing hardware and replacing it with new hardware. We've discussed this, but it's actually happening now. And so it's happened, I think, completed at four stations with more under repair, either starting now or coming soon. And I've been swinging by my local station, just a cruise through the parking lot every day, and they've been working on it, and it's completely offline. And I think by maybe today or tomorrow, it should be back online. So it'd be, I'm presuming, like a 4 or 5 day outage for hopefully better future reliability. And they're not ripping out the CHAdeMOs. They're leaving the original CHAdeMO location and then filling the rest with the new unit. So you'll have a whole bunch of new shiny ones and then this old ugly thing on the end. which is good because I see tons of Leaf owners charging there that need the CHAdeMO spot.
Kyle, quick question, which I didn't ask, and I spoke to Electrify America about this. I didn't know they were going to leave the CHAdeMO unit. You know, the CHAdeMO units currently have a CCS plug and a CHAdeMO connector. And unfortunately, I'm sure you've witnessed it. I've seen it a million times. There's a bunch of open stations. Someone pulls up and plugs into the CHAdeMO unit with a CCS, then a Leaf pulls up and they're screwed. Are they going to remove the CHAdeMO plug from the old CCS? So that at least it's from the old station. So at least CHAdeMO users have a dedicated station.
No, I don't believe so. I think it's going to be a CCS CHAdeMO. It will be untouched is what it looks like to me. And I think that's fair because there's still only four stations and you still need four CCS spots. And then for the occasional CHAdeMO use, it's nice to have it there.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate that people don't understand, you know, that they shouldn't plug into that one unless they have to. It's the same thing with, you know, a Chevy Bolt owner plugging into the only 350 kilowatt unit on a station and sitting there for 2 hours to charge. Now with the new stations with the balanced power, that won't be a problem. So that's a good step in the right direction.
But it was always hard, I would say, to maximize that because most of them were two 150 kilowatts and two 350 kilowatt installations. So if you had a Bolt, you couldn't plug into the one with the CHAdeMO. So that leaves one station that's available that's appropriate for you to plug into. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, well, then do you plug into the CHAdeMO or do you plug into a 350? And you're like, you should just be able to roll up, plug into whatever you want, let the thing charge, and their balanced charging will make that possible.
Okay, well, Driving Habits has the solution here. It's been Electrify America fixed it. There are stickers now, and that's going to solve the problems of the education on the charging stations.
Right,
everyone will pull up; and they'll know exactly which one to use. You know, I mean, who won't figure that out?
Just look for the sticker.
They should just went with colors. I think you know.
No. More complications. It should just be a number. And we just
the number,
which is if you understand simple numbers, you know 350 is more than 150, which that's is more than 50.
And it's not hard.
Yeah. And how about a little coaching in the app? You know, when you select when you hit a charging station, you know, there could be a pop-up that says, you know, information. Do you want to learn a little bit about which station, you know, best suits your electric vehicle or something like that? Put it out there. Most people won't read it, but some people will, and they'll learn a little bit about, you know, if you have this charging station car, maybe you should plug into another. It can't hurt. It wouldn't cost that much for them to just add that functionality to the app. You know, do you want to learn, you know, have like an icon? Do you want to learn about the difference between charging stations and which one you should use? It wouldn't be hard to add that. I'm not putting this all on Electrify America's shoulders, but they should work to at least try to help educate the public on what's the best station to pull at. Kyle's right for a lot of people. A lot of people aren't going to pay attention. It's like, you know, when you go into a parking lot, people will park in a handicapped spot. They'll park where they're not supposed to. A lot of people don't care, but there are a lot of people that I think would look at it, you know, that are interested in learning.
Yeah. All right. And there's the new cabinet there. Someone was asking if they have the balanced ones in place, if they're doing the this balancing balanced, thing yet.
We're showing.
Sorry?
This one that we're showing is currently set up as a shared configuration.
Right. So I think that's part of it. It just goes in. That happens when they put it in the ground. That's part of it.
It's basically like a version 2 supercharger. One charging power feeding 2 dispensers.
Right.
But it should be site-wide. I think that's still old school tech. Everything that is being installed now is still, you know, 3 years old for European standards. We need full centralized power for an entire station.
Yeah. And you have a video. This is your video here, I believe we're looking at.
Yep.
Okay, on your channel.
It's not a video about the new units. It's a video about the upgrades that are going on.
Right. All right. So getting back to what we've been driving, you've been driving your Rivian R1T a little bit, sort of. At least you've put out a 10,000 mile report with your Cervix experience at Rivian. Do you want to give us a little real quick rundown on that?
Yeah, Rivian service was fantastic. Look, it's an early truck. We expected some issues. The truck had some issues. Okay. I still think it's extremely well built, but little things like clicks coming from the driveline that definitely need to be fixed. A tiny bit of panel misalignment, which I didn't care about, but since it was going in, we just mentioned it and they fixed it. The tonneau cover is completely broken, still broken. I think the worst design part of the truck. But overall, like, the thing is so solid. So anyway, Alyssa brought it in for service. Genuinely, I know our audience will never believe it. They didn't really know who we are. We just dropped the thing off. They were extremely communicative. They were quick to fix everything. And they even offered for us to pick it up only after a day or two, but they were waiting on a part. I was away in Europe and I said, hey, just keep the truck there until this one part came in. It was like a speaker grill for the inside of the truck because we had a blown or a malfunctioned speaker from the sound system. Okay. But it was really a really great experience. I could call them, get someone on the phone instantly. You know, they would text. I booked the appointment through the app. They had me film a video of all of the issues so they could order all of the parts before I even dropped the truck off, which I thought was great. And overall, it was really fantastic. And they offered to come up to the house to fix, you know, the remaining stuff. And we just, like I said, left the truck there, but really nice experience.
Nice. I guess the challenge is to keep that experience intact as they scale up and become larger and everything. Right.
But I think it's also dependent on service center location because I've heard negative service experiences. But I know a lot of Rivian owners in Colorado, a lot. And I think we have 500 in the state. I know a percentage of those. I don't know what percentage, but I know a lot of people that own them. And we all talk about how awesome our service center is. So it's not just for me. It's like everyone loves the guys here in Denver, and they do such a great job. They really do.
Right on. I actually saw one on the road last night. I just love it. And this is like the second or third time I've seen it at nighttime in Tallahassee. And it's like, there is a Rivian, and I could see it down the road, that light bar across the front. It's, oh, man. All right. And so you had a video this week about the benefits of an 800-volt EV architecture. I thought that was a great little watch. I don't know. Do you want to talk about that at all really quick?
Oh, no. Everything's in the video. I just spoke about the differences between why you would choose a 400 or an 800-volt system. Pretty high level. Nothing super technical. But I think it was – I just heard a lot of misinformation going on out there and just shared my opinions on both as to why you should or shouldn't go for it.
Right. Hey, you know what? One thing I was thinking about while I was watching that was, so with the 800-volt system, maybe some of the power switching components are more expensive
That was a big – portion of the video, which was cost,
right?
That, but that's then why you wouldn't want to go for it.
But some of that cost is also made up in the less copper use in the vehicle because
because if you're going 800 volt, you're like, oh, let's just crank up the power then.
Right. Okay. So,
you know, I don't think there's anything measurable there that's going to make up the difference for all the subcomponents. But as more 800 volt vehicles come to market, the stuff will come down in price. And so right now I just think high 400 volt is the sweet spot. But if you're chasing ultimate efficiency, or you want to be the fastest, or you want to be whatever it is, you gotta step up the voltage there.
All right. And also, you are the proud owner of another EV.
Yeah.
You bought another car this week.
Yeah.
And I don't know if anyone can guess if anyone wants to take a guess of what you
the video is already posted. So,
right. Yeah, but they might not have seen it. I've seen it because I have my notifications on.
I bought the cheapest electric car for sale in the entire country.
Yep.
And on eBay. Well, no, it was on any website for sale. I went, I used Auto Tempest, which basically pulls every website car for sale into one. Found the cheapest car, not even cheapest running or not running, the cheapest one. It does run, you know, looks really great. It's got racing aero enhancements to the side there. And so that's just, you know, active aero component. Right. And I'm so excited about it because at the end of the day, you know, we cover this, you know, world of expensive cars that are unobtainium for most of our viewers. And, you know, us trying to decide, should you buy a Model S Plaid or an EQS or a Lucid Air, isn't that helpful to the common person.
Right.
So I have tasked our team with basically coming up with a way to cover more inexpensive EVs, more used EVs. And that's exactly what we're doing. So I bought the cheapest electric car for sale in the country. I've also tasked our new guy, Max, with creating a $25,000, you know, used car purchase. And so he's going to go on a test drive of all of the EVs used under 25 grand, which is where that tax credit maxes out at. And we're going to end up buying a car at the end of it, just like a normal person would, and running it for a little bit. So need to cover the inexpensive stuff. And I'm just so excited about my racing Leaf. I'm going to go pick it up this weekend. I'm leaving tomorrow morning in the Rivian. I'm going to drive out to Washington, throw it on a trailer, and tow it back. I was thinking I would drive it back, but its range on the highway. By the way, the owner's a viewer, which was great. So like, I bought the car. He's like, oh, I already know what's going to happen here. And Nissan Leaf Cross Cabriolet coming to a channel near you soon.
Ooh, so, Cross Cabriolet Leaf.
We got to get the chainsaw out. Yeah. We're chopping this roof off.
You know, with the pack in there, it might have enough structural, you know, rigidity to hold together if you do that. Usually, like, the roof is an important part of the structural integrity of, you know.
And if it falls apart, that'll make a great YouTube video.
That's true. And then Jordan can drive it without any worries.
Maybe. We'll see. Oh, no, this is a spicy machine. It's red.
Right.
So let's
and the video is fun to watch too. It's like you with your dad giving you good advice, you know, about talking, you know, looking whether you should buy this or not, what you can get with it for if you sell it, which is not much.
Which so we're never going to sell this thing. Once we buy it, it's staying in the family forever. Right. We're we're actually in the process of getting a small warehouse to house everything, but building up a small collection of fun and interesting cars that I enjoy, not necessarily just the most expensive stuff.
You can make a pretty cool dune buggy with that, you know?
But we're doing dune buggy with the Model 3, lifting it, doing stuff. So I think we go full donk. We squat the rear, raise the front, put 24-inch wheels on it, convertible. It's going to be awesome.
Okay. All right. So you also did a BMW iX DC fast charge this week from 0 to 100. 105 usable. I don't know if you want to give us a quick rundown on your findings on that.
Oh yeah. I mean, again, in the video, it's really only for people who are in the market for these cars because, you know, for the common person, it's a 400 volt system architecture. It's basically a typical CCCV charging curve, which is constant current, constant voltage. It asks for 500 amps all the way until it hits a certain point. And then backs its way down. There are ledges that it drops down. However, the BMW i7 will have the next generation of charging curve that should be smoother. And I'm testing that the first week of November. So I'm looking forward to going through all the i7 nerd stuff. Also, because I think the 7 Series needs to be really good. And I'm not sure it's as good as it needs to be just off of initial glance. The charging on this is great. Again, I took it on a 3,500 mile road trip. I've piled the miles on this thing over the last week, and it's been truly wonderful. It has so much range, this car, 340 miles at 70 miles an hour.
That's in crazy.
The least efficient configuration. and so much range that this at 50% on a road trip in actual usable miles is what our e-tron gets at 100%.
Wow.
And it's just truly insane. So this is a car that you charge to just enough to get to the next station and then you're off. But it's not that bad of a middle charging curve either, where I found myself running to get lunch or something or taking a conference call, and I would charge it to 70, 75% quite often on the trip. And then I would be able to skip one or two stations after that. So there's a couple different strategies here, but I was really impressed overall with how well this package works for, again, being a EV built on a singular platform that will never be reshared, and B, not being an 800 volt system architecture. It's about as good as you can get from a 400 volt car.
Yeah, man, I don't understand what's going on over there at BMW. They're such a clear cut winner here, and they're only making one. Okay.
Yeah, one thing I think we should also mention to our viewers is winter time is coming.
Yes.
And so I ordered yesterday all the winter tires for all the cars, and so I would just encourage you to look at that sooner rather than later, because even then supply was looking a little bit. I was like, oh, they're like, we got three of these left. And I'm like, well, I need four. And they're like, oh, we found the fourth somewhere. So,
and speaking of that winter coming up, I mentioned, I think on the podcast last week, that I sold my Tesla Model 3. And I have six 18-inch winter tires with less than 2,000 miles on them for the Model 3 for the 18-inch wheels. So I'm going to sell them, but somebody here in New Jersey, somebody that can drive and pick them up, I'm not shipping them anywhere. So if you have a Model 3 with 18-inch wheels, you live in New Jersey and you want winter tires, send me a message and maybe we'll make a deal.
Right on. Yep. All right. So anything else we want to talk about? You want to talk about, Kyle? Anything else you've been driving this week?
From my side, trying to think. Yeah, just a lot of stuff. We're doing e-tron versus Model X versus iX today. We were trying to get an R1S in time, but it won't arrive in time for this. So that'll be a few days late, but that's going to be an interesting one. What would you guys go for? Because that's a tough competition right there, in my opinion.
iX. I mean, I don't know, after listening to you talk about the range and charging speed and just the driving experience, and you know,
yeah, but there is something about the e-tron that you just sit like another 6 inches lower inside of it. It's got way better of an interior, in my opinion, for just usability. Okay. Yeah, the iX, I haven't really felt that comfortable in it. I feel like I'm sitting on top of the car. The dash is really low. It's quite futuristic, but the seats kind of suck, in my opinion. Whereas the e-tron just is perfection.
It fits you like glove, as they say.
Yeah.
Interesting. I don't know.
Martin, you seem like a Tesla Model X man, if I had to guess.
I've never owned one. I need to get it out of my system.
You do.
The e-tron is something else, though. And if you don't need to road trip it, the e-tron 50 is depreciating quicker than the 55. I would go e-tron 50 S-line and find someone who, when they bought it, specced the flat bottom steering wheel and spent money they shouldn't have, because that would be my spec on that car, and get some nice wheels as well. And they are depreciating quicker than the 55s, which are holding their value or anything up from that. What was it called? The Black Edition or the Launch Edition?
Yep, the original one.
Yeah, they're all still holding their value, but the smaller battery one, I don't know why. Maybe people just want the miles, because it is a thirsty beast. But if you don't need to road trip it and you don't need that maximum charge speed, I would pick the 50 smaller battery. That would be more than enough for every journey I do.
It sounds like you've been thinking about this a little bit, Martin.
You know what? We all play What Should I Buy Next, don't we? I just do that most days of What Should I Buy Next.
Okay.
The difference is Kyle acts upon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Something pops like, in his head. Oh, let me just buy a cheap EV today. Well, let me just buy this one. So
yeah.
Martin's sitting over there in the UK fantasizing, and Kyle's writing checks.
Right. I still don't have my Bolt yet, even.
Oh, yeah, come on. Yeah.
What's going on with the Bolt? Just go get one.
Yeah, well, I need to have the money, so I need to do
Well, how long are you going to borrow this Model 3 for?
You said two or three months, so but okay, hopefully but not that long.
I need it back for winter time-ish.
There you go.
So I need
it back for early December. By the way, the Model 3 is in for service. Right. They requested $2,000 from me. and which isn't bad because that includes a new windshield, which Safelite wanted to charge me $2,800 for one windshield. So this includes windshield fixing noises and some other things for all less than one windshield from Safelite.
Does that include the roof too?
No.
Okay.
Not going to fix that.
Okay. It's got a crack.
It's just a hairline crack. It's fine.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I'm not. But don't roll it over.
I won't. Not on purpose, at least.
Right.
I like Jordan's comment. Dom's been talking about the bolt longer than Tara's been talking about making a car.
That's true. That is true.
That is not true.
Dom, get the Spark sold. Honestly, these companies out there that are offering you bazillion bucks for a used car, they're going to blow through their VC money and then realize that so get it sold this week. Just sell it and get a rental for a week or something because these companies just get shot of it while they're offering stupid money.
That's on my list of things to do this afternoon, actually, is resubmit like a Carvana thing and actually follow up with the pictures of the title and all that kind of crap and arrange
or sell it privately.
Well, I don't know any of the specific ones. We've got a couple over here, and whenever I put stuff in, it just comes out. I don't know how they make any money because it's one of them's owned by an auction house. One of them's just pulled out of Europe and coming back to the UK because the models don't work. But some of these companies offer so much money for your used cars, and I know the market is hot. But I don't understand it. But if you can wait, do it, sell it privately.
I suck at selling private. I don't like asking people for money. It's so much easier to like a company is like a faceless.
You're
thing
not asking them for money for nothing. You're giving.
Yeah, I know. But it's you.
Give me money.
How many cars have you sold, Kyle? How many cars have you? You don't sell cars. You just buy cars, right? Selling is so much like you said in your video. It's so much easier to buy cars than sell cars.
Yes, that's true. I hate selling cars, which is why we now need to get a warehouse to put all the cars.
Right. Or just give them to your friends to borrow for a while.
No, well, I'm done with that. No one's borrowing my cars except Dom.
I'm going to be a little bit of a dig there. I'm not going to mention who.
No, and Jordan's welcome to borrow my Leaf.
All right. So the elephant in the room, or the room is the elephant, actually. Tom, what's going on here, man? Your garage is like totally transformed.
Yeah, so we talked about this a little bit earlier, a couple of weeks ago. I'm doing a complete garage makeover. Actually partnered, full disclosure, with a company called Garage Living, and they do this. They like pimp out your garage. You know, people have Ferraris and stuff. They put lifts in your garage if you want it. So I partnered with this company. I'm not getting it for free, but at a greatly reduced price. I'm going to be making a video, the whole process, converting your garage. I'll kind of pick up my laptop and I was going to show everybody.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, there you go. Sorry.
So behind me, you'll see I have the Tesla wall connector up. I have a couple of NEMA 1450s. They're not even wired yet. I'm going to be installing that soon. And on the other side, kind of where you can see that thing coming out of the wall, that's where the Ford Charge Station Pro is going to be for my Lightning. So I'll give us a quick walk around. Got a bunch of cabinets on this side over here.
That's cool.
On this side over here, I've got, this is going to be the wall where all my charging stations are mounted. Right now, they're just on this portable rack that I have. But as you can see, it's all slot wall. So it's going to be on, they're going to be all hanging up on that wall. And I'll use the wall behind me, as always, to do most of the videos. You can see I have over here, a monitor now. So I'm going to be able to do some recordings here and point to graphs and stuff on the monitor as I'm talking about my charging reviews and so forth. So super psyched about it. It's coming out great. But there will be a full video on the whole process, a time lapse of them doing everything. I just need to get the electrical work done here now. And at the same time, I'm upgrading my service to 400 amp service at the house. I'm installing the Ford's intelligent backup power to power my house with my Lightning. And that's dragging things on because the utility is kind of dragging their feet on approving an upgrade to 400 amp service here. And, just a bunch of things with permits and so forth and so on that's holding everything back. But hopefully within a month, everything will be done. Everything will be installed. And I'll have some really cool videos to show you guys of, how to install Charge Station Pro, how to install intelligent backup power system, how to do a service upgrade at your house, all that stuff. Plus the whole garage remake thing that we're doing here. Actually, the owner of the company is flying here from Canada next week, and we're going to do a small interview in the garage and show all the different things. There's going to be all the different things like hangers on the wall, like a bicycle hanger and things you can put on. The advantage of having slot walls like this is you can basically put anything anywhere. Right. Which is great for me. I can hang chargers anywhere I want. That's a picture of when they were started to do the work. That's the company Garage Living. So really cool. Looking forward to it. And I'm going to probably be as I am today, doing my podcasts and so forth from here in the garage, because that just makes sense. It's a better environment. I had to pull an Ethernet cable and make sure that the acoustics are okay. I don't know. How does it sound? Is it, but you're getting a big echo?
It's a bit of an echo going on, yeah, but well, it's not bad. I mean, if you put a car in there, it'd be fine.
Yeah. So, and talking about cars, so, you know, I have the Lightning. I had talked to you guys about that I had ordered a Rivian a little over a year ago. So right. I got word this week that it is in and they're delivering it. That's why I'm drinking coffee from my Rivian mug today. I'm actually getting it today. I had scheduled it for 12:30, and here on the East Coast now it's 10:45, I guess. And I don't know if you might have noticed during the podcast, I picked up my phone because they're text messaging me saying they're going to be here like an hour early. So they're going to be pulling up any second now.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And you got the perfect spec, launch green on Ocean Coast, right?
I didn't do launch green. I went with forest green. I like the launch green, but I put them next to each other, Kyle.
Yeah.
And I like the regular green. I know people like the launch green, especially because it's exclusive, but I really don't care about that. I thought the forest green just did it a little bit more for me.
It's a launch edition?
No, it's not a launch edition. It's the adventure, with...
How did that happen? Because you ordered a launch, didn't you?
No, I didn't order launch. I didn't order launch.
Really?
But it's basically spec'd. It has everything like a launch edition. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. And what wheels do you get?
I got the same wheels that you see on that truck in the picture there.
The all-terrains.
Yeah. Oh, the all-terrain. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Yeah. That'll be cool. That's a freaking spec though. Green on white.
Yeah. That is awesome. I'm looking forward to it. So I'll probably have some pictures on Twitter today if you guys want to check it out.
Would be amazing. I'm just thinking testing wise, if you can run your truck at some point early while it's fresh. I never had the opportunity to do mine from full to dead and look at how many kilowatt hours you can pull out of it using the onboard calculation. I also want to do my truck because it just hit 10,000 miles and I want to see if, from basically to where it stops moving, I want to see if there's any degradation in that time frame.
Yep. Yeah. No, I definitely plan on doing that, Kyle. I'm going to do a range test really soon, like within the first couple hundred miles. So that'll do it right there.
Yeah. That'll be perfect.
Nice. Are you going to do a delivery video and everything too?
I'm going to do a delivery video. I sent Rivian an email saying that I plan on recording the whole delivery because they're delivering it to my house. I had the option of picking it up at the delivery center or home delivery. And our delivery center here is in Brooklyn. And it's such a pain in the ass to get to Brooklyn from New Jersey. Yeah. So I said, no, I'll bring it to my house. And I sent them an email saying I plan on recording the whole delivery process. And I got a quick email back like, that shouldn't be a problem. But I don't know if they know to what extent I plan on recording the delivery process. It's not like I'm picking up my phone and say, hey, here's my new truck. No, like I'm going to mic up the guy bringing it. I'm going to have him sitting here for an hour going over all the features on the truck. So hopefully the delivery person is somebody that's willing to do it. If he's not willing to do it, there's nothing I can do to change that, I'm going to ask him, are you comfortable with that? And, as long as he or she is feels okay talking on camera, I don't think it should be a problem.
That'd be great. I haven't seen it. There's probably some out there, but I haven't really seen any Rivian delivery videos like that, especially with like going in depth and explaining the truck and everything.
Yeah. Well, that's what I figure out. I'll even add like the whole ordering process and the different steps. There's like Kyle knows it's like an 8-step process you have to go through online to fill things out. All the insurance, your driver's license. I'll go through all that, how to order and take delivery of a Rivian R1T.
So. What do you think the process was like? If you had to sum it up, do you think it was pretty easy from your side?
Yeah, it was real simple. I mean, to me, it was super simple. I mean, the most difficult thing was I'm transferring a registration from my Tesla because I still have almost a year left on that. Yeah. And in order to give Rivian the right to transfer my registration, you need to have like documents notarized. So they had to set me up with an online notary service, and they have to, you have to have live video they have to witness you as you're signing the documents. So that was the only thing that like was a little bit of a hiccup, but everything else, super simple. Just upload my documents, send it through. They accept either ACH. You could write a check, but then it has to clear or wire transfer. And Rivian doesn't accept ACH from my bank. That was a little bit of a glitch, you know. And it's PNC Bank, it's a pretty big bank. It's not a huge global bank, but you know, that was a little disappointing. So I couldn't just do a quick ACH payment. I had to go to the bank and do a wire transfer, and that was
a little bit of a glitch. A wire transfer.
Yeah, you got to wait till really it clears. Impressed.
I was really impressed with the whole 8-step process. How smooth everything seemed to go from an online standpoint. It's just like, you know, so much better than buying a car the traditional way.
Yeah.
So
that's what Ford's trying to emulate.
Well, we'll see if they can do
it. The devil's in the details. Let's see how they execute. But that's what they're aiming for.
The bar is set.
Yeah. Right. So would you think you prefer the Rivian sales experience to the Tesla sales experience?
I don't know. It's very similar. Very, you know, they're both super easy to me. Okay. You know, I mean,
I actually thought the Tesla had a little bit less steps.
It probably did. Yeah. You know, honestly, I did it 2 years ago. I don't even remember exactly. Both of them were super, super quick. Rivian, I will say this, has more communication. Tesla, like, nobody emailed me. Nobody called me. Like, it was just like, you know, you wanted to like send a message like, do you know I ordered this vehicle? Like, you know, do you know Tom Mulligany exists with Tesla?
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, I hope it went through. Like, I never bought a car like this and I'm not getting any feedback. Rivian assigned you a Rivian guide, they call them. That person's been emailing me, calling me. You know, they actually called me about a week or two before they were going to send me the email to finalize and do everything. And they're like, we just want to still make sure, you know, that you're going through the purchase and everything, because really soon you're going to be getting an email saying that your truck's ready and you have to do this 8-step process. So I like the fact that Rivian is very interactive. I have a name, I have a phone number, I have an email, none of that with Tesla. I can't, you know,
I think it's an advantage. You know, it sounds like an advantage to me.
Nice, but I will say it was nice because we've had a few Teslas on our side. When I went to pick up my Model S, it's all videoed. We walked in, we said, hey, I'm Kyle. They said, hey, sign this. You're taking over the car. Here are your keys. Have a nice day. Literally 30 seconds.
But it didn't used to be. Tesla sold handfuls of cars, you'd go along, it'd be an occasion. There'd be like a guard of honor walking you into a showroom where there'd be a silk cloth draped over. Sure. And it was the proper kind of dealership experience if you wanted that from Tesla.
I will say they did offer me, do you want us to show you around the car? But they're like, you kind of already know the thing. And I'm like, yeah, just please, thanks, have a nice day.
And yet, and that is the problem with scaling, or a challenge with Tesla scaling, because now it's just, you're just another number in the 2 million cars they'll make this year, near as damn it. And if you're buying a car, you're just another name. And if your car is in for service with Tesla, that's the big issue with them at the minute. And Rivian can give you that personalized experience. Rivian need to, because they're new and they're learning. But it's, you know, people have more recently, perhaps this year, had their car in with Tesla, you know, at times for weeks. And they're just emailing, and you can't get, there's no human being to get hold of. And then you finally text again, you get a reply, you know, which is basically, you know, new mobile, who dis? And you're like, you know who I am! You know, you've got my car! And it's like, that's the problem. Rivian should absolutely be doing what they're doing. I love that. I love the personal service.
Yeah. All right.
So if anybody's wondering what type of content you're going to be getting from me, I think I'm not going to be reviewing cars for a little while. I want to show you guys something really quickly since we're talking about my garage. I want to open up this.
Okay. It's not going to be beer. Nope. Boxes.
Holy moly.
Most of those are EVSE that I have to review. So I'm just going to be doing review after review, and then I even have some more.
That's like over there. Of work right there.
What? So that's get insane. Ready for some extreme charging station reviews, because I stopped reviewing them for a little while because I've been ripping apart the garage. Yeah. So now I've got like, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, at least 12 here that I have to do reviews on. So
it's like at least a week. Like
almost right. 2 weeks worth of content.
More than that for me, dude. I can't pump out videos like you do.
I mean, he does a full test.
That's going to take me a while to get to all those. Because, you know, what I do, when I do a review, I pretty much use the charging station for about 2 weeks to charge my cars. I install it and everything. And then over a 2 week period, I use it. So I kind of learn the functionality, how the apps work and everything. So it actually takes me a while to do one review. It's not like a 1 day deal, and then I freeze it overnight. And right. Probably close to if I can compress it down to a week per charging station review, that's still good for me because I spend some time with it.
Right, Tom's reviews are legit. His charger reviews.
Tom, you should review my exploded charging situation in my garage.
What's that?
Did you show us?
Oh no, yeah, I saw this.
What happened to it? Like,
no, I'll pull it apart today or tomorrow morning because I hadn't even gotten to it yet. But
definitely video that for sure. Record.
I think the wire nuts or something. Basically, it was just installed totally incorrectly by a professional, installer, certified, licensed, and flipped the breaker and it exploded in my face. It was pretty spicy.
And did the charger itself explode, or was it like a junction box?
No, it was the junction box. And who knows if it fried the chargers.
Yeah, it's not ideal to have a junction box in line with a charging station. Sometimes you have to, but you really, electricians should really pull one wire from the service panel right to the unit. And I know
it's because we had two chargers hooked up in a load sharing configuration.
Yeah.
It was just done pretty poorly. I wired up the chargers, I want to say, and that did pretty well. Those have not exploded. But the part that the professional did explode.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I'm really curious to see what happened in there. If it isn't a junction box, what a lot of electricians, even good electricians, they won't use the right sized wire nut, like for the amperage that's going to be pulled under continuous load. You know, that's one of the things that gets overlooked. You know, different wire nuts have different amperage ratings that can handle different amounts of power. And if they put one on that really can't, you know, handle that power over hours and hours of continued use, you know, it melts it. And then all of a sudden the wires are arcing and boom.
Yeah, and we're heavy users and doing deep charges on big battery packs. And I got to say, it's a whole new world living without home charging. Not as bad as many would think, but definitely makes me appreciate having one that works when we get it back working.
Yeah. So, you know, for the first time in 13 years, I don't have level 2 charging at my house. And it's been like a month now. It's nuts. Like for me, with the Lightning and the Model 3, you know, the Lightning's hungry. You know, it uses a lot of power. So I've been charging level 1 now for over a month, and it's like the vehicles are always plugged in. As soon as I come home, plug it in, just let it run. My Lightning will I wanted to see how long it would return to 100 miles of driving range. I'll have you guys guess how many hours of charging on level 1 to add 100 miles of driving range.
You quizzed us on this last show, didn't you?
Oh, did I?
Yeah, and I can't remember what it was. It was
bad memory.
36 hours, you said, right?
No, it was like 52. It does just about 50 miles a day in 24 hours of charging. Right. Yeah.
So I think you did mention that a little bit last week.
Are you doing home storage as well? Did you mention that?
Yeah, that's going to be phase 2 though, because the equipment that my partner's Q Merit, you can see behind me here, my channel's sponsored by Q Merit. Their installation, nationwide installation network of home electric vehicle plus energy storage, anything, nationwide network of electricians. And they have partners with that they're partnered with. And the on-site energy storage system that they want to install here isn't ready yet. So, but it's great because I'm going to be constantly upgrading my home system here and doing videos on it. You know, I mean, there's so many things we have planned working on in the future with upgrades, because new stuff keeps coming out. Like we wanted to do a complete load shedding smart panel for my 400 amp service now, but the company that they have, it's not ready. So like I'm putting in a 400 amp service, we might be ripping it out 8 months and putting in a whole new system, which is great, you know, and, you know, we'll show people
more videos
what we can do and things like that.
Yeah. So there seems to be a general consensus in the comments that wire nets are terrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The US should look at, what is this, WAGO terminals over wire nets? That's a little out of my area of expertise, but okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Take care, Kyle.
Oh, Kyle, how'd you go? Kyle,
he has a call. He had a call at 4 o'clock. He's got at my time for.
Oh, I missed that. I see. All right. I'm sorry.
1 second.
Bye, Kyle.
Okay.
Tom's going. What?
All right, no, he's got some.
Is this you and me, Martin?
We're talking about wire nuts. The world. So,
yeah.
What's I that? Use these type of connectors if I have to, have my high amperage loads. These things are commercial connectors that are really made to hold a lot of continuous power. So, these type of connectors are better than wire nuts if you have to go. In your line of your EV charging equipment, if you need to have it not a direct line and have it in a junction box, don't use just regular wire nuts. They especially if you undersize, and it's very easy to undersize them.
Right on. Mm. Okay. Let's see. So, you had one video. We didn't mention this actually. We're up against the time, but you have a video charging your Tesla that you just sold via your Ford F-150 Lightning. And there's a post on this on Inside EVs, and you have a video on State of Charge, I think it's on.
Yeah. So, you know, the Ford Lightning has Ford Pro Power on board, which the conventional Lightnings also have. It's just that the Lightning comes standard with the highest power rating, 9.6 kilowatts, 40 amps of power you can offload. But you can't do that from one outlet. That's the total output. The one 240 volt outlet that they have, we'll deliver up to 30 amps. So yeah, I made a video because I wanted to know how quickly would it charge the Model 3. You know, would there be charging losses? How long would it take to add 10% state of charge to my Model 3, which is good for about 30 miles of driving range. Let's say, you know, you happen to need to help out a Tesla Model 3 that had run out of charge, or, you know, on the side of the road. And as Ford loves to point out, that you could charge EVs and you'd add about 30 miles of driving range. And it took me an hour and 3 minutes. And one of the things that I want to point out about this video. So I used my, hey Jordan, I used my Ford, the portable charging cable that comes with the Lightning. Okay. So it on the back of the label, it says that it's a 32 amp unit. The problem with the Lightning is that it delivers 30 amps. Now, most electric vehicles are going to try to pull more than 30 amps if they have an EVSC that can deliver more than 30 amps, because it'll communicate. So what a lot of people had posted online was that they tried to charge their Mustang Mach-E with a Lightning, and it'll charge for a minute or so, and then it shuts off because it's trying to pull 32 amps, and the Lightning saying, I only have 30 amps.
Right.
Now, unfortunately, I didn't know this before I made the video, and I didn't mention it in the video, which is why I want to talk about it today. So evidently, even though my Lightning's portable charger that comes from Ford is labeled 32 amps, just like the Mustang Mach-E's, they look identical. Ford actually has the unit slightly derated, so it will only deliver 30 amps. So it will talk to the Pro Power Onboard and not deliver more amps than Pro Power Onboard can deliver. So people that have tried to charge their Mustang Mach-E with a Lightning used their Mustang Mach-E's portable charging cable, and it will shut off. It won't charge. But if they would have pulled out the charging cable from the Lightning and plugged it in, it would have charged just fine. So that's one thing that I want to point out from my video. Another thing, I made a mistake in my video, is that I said that the Lightning comes with the Tesla adapter and the NEMA 1430 to 1450 adapter, which you need to put into the back of Pro Power on board. It was nicely tucked in my truck. Ford mentioned at the launch, the Lightning launch, that they're going to include this in the vehicles. What they didn't say, and I talked to them when I just went out to talk to them about this new dealership thing with Model E, was that They were only doing that for like the first wave or two of Lightning owners. So it's not a permanent thing. And so now people are getting Lightnings and it's not included. And I have tons of comments on my video that said, hey, Tom, I got my Lightning. They didn't include this. Maybe they just gave it to you because you're an influencer, or, you know, should I go fight my dealership? And I was telling people, yeah, go back to your dealership and tell them they forgot to put it in your truck. That's not the case. If it's not in your, if it wasn't in your truck, you weren't in that first, I think, one or two waves of deliveries, and Ford's not including it. So I kind of scolded Ford a little bit at this event and said, you know, that's terrible. You didn't communicate that. Everything you said is that it was going to come with it. You never said just the first 2,000 trucks or whatever. Right. And what I did offer them unsolicited advice, which I'm notorious for, I said, you know, the Tesla adapter, I don't see any need for you to include that, because that's expensive. It's like, you know, $100 or whatever. I mean, Ford probably paid $75 for it or whatever. But I said, you need to include the NEMA 1430 to 1450 adapter. That should be included with the truck. That probably cost them $10. Right. And, you know, because that allows you to use Pro Power on board with any device that's a NEMA 1450 plug. So, you know, we'll see if they listen to my advice on that, because it seemed like they took it to heart. And were like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. And that should be included with the Lightning, just that adapter, maybe not the Tesla adapter, but in any event, that's what I learned out of this. Those two things, after making the video, I wish I'd have known them before, because I would have put it in the video. But that's the case. That's why, if you try to charge the Lightning with a different portable EVSE that can pull, if you try to charge from the Lightning with a different portable EVSE that can deliver 32 amps, it's not going to work. You have to use the one that came with the car, the vehicle, the truck. Roman's going to be pissed.
Right on. Right. Hey, so welcome, Jordan, precision driving expert extraordinaire. So right up at the end of the show, but I mentioned earlier that, you know, you drove the Zero Motorcycle DSR X. Is that what they're calling it?
Yes.
And that's an ADV, basically, kind of style bike?
Yeah, they call it adventure sport. They call it the first electric adventure sport bike, which is funny because Energica has their new one, which they didn't technically call it adventure sport. It was just like adventure. So
right.
Nomenclature, right?
Right. So have you driven that one, by the way?
No. Okay. Talking to Energica now to have them send me one, which would be great. And I'm literally in 20 minutes going to pick up the Livewire one. So really just jumping all in on electric motorcycles.
So one thing about this bike, I heard mention, Rideapart, who is part of the Motor One Inside EVs thing, also reviewed it. And they mentioned that it doesn't come with a chain. It comes with a belt, which is, you know, for off-road riding like that, people tend to like chains over belts, I think, even though they're noisier, but they're more reliable.
So here's the thing. The DSR that we had last year on long-term loan, we broke multiple belts on, and that's been an issue. Right. There are easy chain conversion kits that people buy and put on their bikes they're taking off-road. With the DSR-X, it's a new belt that is wider. It's like 25% wider. It's built out of carbon, so much stronger. And the rear sprocket actually has holes in between every single tooth. So dirt and sand that gets in there gets filtered through the holes, so it's not between the belt and the sprocket, which is how it usually breaks.
Nice.
So it's a really clever solution, and we'll see. We'll have to see how durable it really is.
Right.
I'm half expecting just to see more broken belts, but maybe they've like actually solved it, in which case I hope they take that tech to the rest of their lineup.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a great... I don't know, do other manufacturers do that? That you know of?
I don't know. I haven't ridden the Livewire since it was a concept 7 years ago. So right, I'm same. Sure it's a completely different thing now.
You drove the Livewire back then?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sweet, that was sweet. Right when it was in Avengers 2, the film. Right. And now I'm going to go ride it after seeing it in The Long Way Up, which, you know, is like my favorite series ever.
Right. I think I rode it on like the last stop of that tour in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but you also drove the Polaris UTV, which is based on, which has the Zero Motorcycles powertrain in it as well. So Polaris and Zero have a relationship, and you got to drive that. How was that? It was like expensive, I understand, but.
It's expensive, but at the same time, it's not the most expensive Polaris Ranger. So there are people with money and want the nice thing on their ranch, which is great. I mean, it's a tool, and, you know, farm equipment's super expensive, but it's a tool for the job. So people criticize the price. There's always someone who's going to pay that price. Same with Zero. The DSRX is expensive, starts at 25 right. grand,
right?
But it's also a lot of bike. And when you think of the range and the 0-60 speed, it's like, if you were to buy an EV car with that spec, you'd be spending 2 or 3 times the amount. I know it's not a car, but so the DSRX has an all new motor, which has more torque by adding more copper into the motor and a okay. little bit less horsepower. The Ranger you see here actually uses the same motor from the DS or the SRF and the SRS, the other flagship bike Zero makes. So this ZF 7510. So 110 horsepower or 82 kilowatts, 140 pound feet of torque. Plenty for this Ranger. And this Ranger has one or two batteries, not exactly from a Zero. They're made from the same source, but not quite the exact same size as the ones found the Zeros. So either okay. basically 15 or 30 kilowatt hours, depending on the spec. So I came away from this. Me and Max had a great time with the Ranger, taking it on some trails, not crazy trails. Obviously, they were made by Polaris, so they knew right. they would accomplish it. But I came away from that event thinking, wow, I want this powertrain in like an imported Japanese, like Mitsubishi Pajero or something, like just
yeah, right.
plop it in something. That's my winter car.
A POW.
Or, yeah, POW. POW. Or my Miata, you know.
Right. Okay. All right. Hey, man, I'd like to talk about this more, but we're way over time and everything, but, I'm glad you could join us and share that little bit with us. So I guess that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please, and if you didn't like the show, please give us a thumbs up. If you're watching us on YouTube, don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can follow Tom Logney at Tomalog, that's with 2 M's. And Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. Jordan Schiefer, you're at Jordan.
Jordan underscore Schiefer. Yep.
Sorry?
There it is. Yep.
Jordan underscore Schiefer. All right. And I'm at Dominic underscore Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications, and we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.